Welcome to the Fearless Women Podcast. We're inspiring conversations for the unafraid. I'm Janice McDonald, founder of the Beacon Agency, author, and global champion for women. Why am I making this show? Because I want to share the inspiring stories of women leaders in business, arts and culture, politics, and more with all of you. Hear how they've chosen to go forward and be bold and make the world a better place, even when it wasn't easy to do. Subscribe now wherever you find podcasts. Hey, everybody, I'm Janice McDonald. Welcome to the Fearless Women Podcast. Very excited to have the male perspective represented on the show today. Stephen Brown, the president of Fuse, a rapidly growing marketing and advertising agency made up of three core divisions, Fuse Marketing, Fuse Health, and Fuse Live. We have lots to talk about. Welcome, Stephen.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you, of course, and welcome to our listeners from around the world, including USA, Australia, Ireland, UK, and so many more countries. We want our community to grow. So please tell your friends and follow us on Instagram. Thanks also to our amazing sponsors, 30% Club Canada, ADGA, and BDC. So let's start with Fuse and the affiliated company. Stephen, what are you up to over there as the president?
Well, I am enjoying, thriving, constantly amazed by the crazy pace of advertising these days. So it's an advertising marketing agency. We've made it 17 years in a very turbulent, wow, fascinating time. And when I say made it, it's not like we've been scraping by. We've done very well. I think sometimes companies can really get scared off by constant change, and some of us just lean in. Mm-hmm. So we've been leaning in and pivoting as we go. It's fascinating. It's a really good business. It's incredibly creative business, incredibly fast changing business. Digital has totally uprooted and totally somersaulted the entire world of advertising.
And very competitive too.
Massively.
Is the other thing. Like, woo, yeah. super competitive industry.
When you go back to that funny show called Mad Men, you know, it was an extreme time in advertising, which I've never lived through. That's the 60s. But the competitiveness you saw there in the pitch, some of those things haven't changed. Mm. So you're constantly out competing against your other agencies, trying to win business, trying to keep business. And it's funny. Now, that's the part, you either love it or you don't. And you can't survive in this business unless you love it. So I love it. But in 16, now 17 years, you know, we've had to pivot. We've had to change. We always started on the digital side and the sort of more what used to be called below the line advertising. So a lot of, you know, a lot of promotion, a ton of customer relationship marketing, direct marketing, digital, experiential marketing. And as times have changed and that line has disappeared because of digital, we've now become an integrated agency, which is amazing. So we look at it differently, but being privately held, independent in this market right now where so many of the big holding companies control advertising, there's a quest. There's a lot of demand for private right now. You know, digital transformation, digital disruption sort of blew through some old norms. And I think you used to, you know, the saying, if you hired IBM, you never made a mistake type thing. I'm not sure if I'm using that.
Yeah, I know the sense right, of what you mean, though.
So
yeah.
If you used to hire Ogilvy or hire a McLaren, mm-hmm, McCann, and there's nothing, those are good agencies. I don't want to say anything bad about them.
Yeah.
But you can't really screw up as a marketing director or a VP of marketing. And so the smaller ones would have to struggle to get some of that work. Now it's sort of flipped around where the hold codes, the big ones, are really slow, sluggish, and not digital enough. Mm-hmm. And so the independents, I mean,
you're responsive.
We're responsive.
Right?
We're
super
entrepreneurs.
Creative. Yes.
So you have to be creative. You have to be incredibly strategic. So we've elevated all those things. But we also know how to hunt for and keep and fight for it. Mm-hmm. So it's the basics of humanity, I guess, survival of the fittest, in a very fascinating, stylish, fast-paced, very creative industry.
And I think also, if we look at kind of big trends going through many industries, there's more kind of local, and mm-hmm, that feel, I think, may be something that consumers or clients are responding to.
Yeah, there's definitely, I mean, in Canada, so much of the advertising world is centered in Toronto and the GTA, with, you know, a fair bit in West and Montreal. There's still a fair bit of other zones. But if you build your community, if you connect with the community, if you build your network, which I know we're going to talk about, mm-hmm, those things also help. Because, you know, I think people want the independence, the maybe they would be considered, when we were starting, the underdogs to be able to rise up and do well. So there's a bit of that.
How has your leadership style changed in as you hunt and gather clients and, you know, and or has it changed over time?
You know, I think the fundamentals of your leadership style are a direct reflection of your personality. So I don't know if they change massively. I would say you learn a lot. So in the early days, so you alter and adjust as you mature, and you also mature. And so certain things change. So I would say I always was probably your classic lead by example. So don't just come in, bark orders to people and leave and let them do it, figure out. I mean, I had to lean in and do it with them, learn myself, and then delegate. And so I've always been an effective delegator. I've always been an effective team leader. I love the people side of this business. That's why I'm in it, and the creative side of the business. I think that's what has made me effective at it. I'd say what's changed over the years is purely around perspective. So, I think I used to sweat the client moods that you'd have. So a client would freak out and it's like, oh my God, the client's freaking out. We gotta jump on
end
this.
End of the world.
End of the world. And now I've discovered all clients freak out. And you actually have to let your team solve the problem. You don't have to lean in and do that one. That's their job. That's how they grow their careers. I've also learned that if your client trusts you 1 month, they will trust you during a bad month. And so you have to manage through those things. I've also learned that someone leaving the team is... We don't want people to leave quickly, but everyone comes and goes.
It's not catastrophic anymore.
It is not catastrophic. Right. So I think it's about, I've always been a fairly calm, I'm not a panicky leader at all. Mm-hmm. So
which is so nice to work with.
I think so.
So nice.
I think it scares some people because during a really tough time, I'm like, come on.
What's wrong with Steven?
I'm just even Steven. I am even Steven. So
I love that.
So they're used to more volatile leaders in this business. That's just not who I am.
There's no Devil Wears Prada.
No, I am. And I'm a Gemini. So people think, and I think I'm sure that twin comes out sometimes. I don't want to self-analyze, but it takes a lot. And after 17 years of, you know, when you own your own business, business, you know, I'm looking at cash flow, I'm looking at revenues, I'm looking at everything. And trust me, cash is the weirdest thing in business, which no one ever teaches you in school or anything like this. That if you want to start your own business, cash is king. Like, it really is funny how that side of the business can have me far more stressed than a panicky client.
Absolutely.
And those are some things you learn when you run your own business. And by the way, I don't run this on my own. There's three of us as partners, and we have a big team of 90 people. So it's not like it's all on me. Mm-hmm. But when you own it, you wear it, you feel it.
And it's a big responsibility. Those 90 people are counting on you.
Yeah.
Mortgage payments and rent and all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah. You feel that. I would say the other is, when you're younger, you really think you can do it all. And what I've really learned, and I love this learning, this is a great thing, is I used to be like my weaker sides were financials and, you know, some things around, you know, I can understand a whole bunch of data analytics, but actually crunching data is not my strength and things like that. And you realize, oh, actually, I don't have to build those skills. I'm never going to be good at math. Mm-hmm. Like, I totally understand the basics of finance, but not the degree you need. Mm-hmm. That's why I have a CFO.
Yes.
And then your relationship with your CFO totally changes because you're now a partner with your CFO, not a boss subordinate type thing. I need him or her. And that's sort of the things that you learn. It takes a bit of time to learn those things.
Yeah. So Madonna once said, in life, there is no real safety except for self-belief. What's your reaction to this quote?
Well, I'm a little shocked because I'm a big Madonna fan and I've never heard that quote before. So
I picked a good one.
Let me strike a pose while I think about it. Can you repeat the quote again?
Yes. In life, there is no real safety except for self-belief.
Okay.
Like, kind of, do you bet on yourself?
Yeah. No, it's fascinating. I don't think, in reflection of me and my career, I became an entrepreneur sort of through the side door. And I don't think I ever said, I'm going to own my own business. But you do learn. So in the roughest of points of 17 years, what never falters is if the company collapsed, which it hasn't, and I don't think it will.
Because you're working on the cash flow with your CFO.
And I have that perspective.
Yeah.
But I will be fine. Because what I've learned in 17 years is, wow, I can handle a ton. And let me be clear, while this is all going on, I've had tumultuous times in personal life and family things that are going on and friend things that are going on. The world is bombarding you with stuff. And you wake up every morning, swing your feet out of bed, and go to work. And so I guess I totally agree with it. I think sometimes famous celebs can make things sound so easy and so simple. It's not that it's easy. It's just when there's a challenge in front of you, you have two options. You can run right into it and solve it, or you can kind of try to go around it or try to run away from it. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know that I was the person who ran right into it until I got muddied in life. So,
yeah, I love that. Run right into it.
Yeah, you have
right.
to.
Because running away, it's just going to chase you anyways.
It does.
So you were recently the board chair of the Canadian Marketing Association, and you've been a very tireless volunteer with lots of nonprofits. So why are you an active volunteer, and how has it helped your career while helping your community, if at all?
You know, there'd be a bunch of layers to this answer. Mm-hmm. So it's not a simple one. So I come from a modest family, great family, but didn't grow up with like wealth or affluence or anything like that. So I think there's definitely a layer of when you get to a certain level where you're doing well, there's a gene or some muscle in me that says I have to give back. So, and
I think
that's,
we call those values.
Yes. Okay. Oh, I actually have them.
Look at you, Stephen.
So I'll go to the CMA in a minute because mm-hmm. that's more of a business one. Yeah. For personal, so I'm a proud gay man. Mm-hmm. So I did a lot of work with HIV AIDS related causes. And that was because I saw it was happening. I'm a bit younger than the cohort that went through the worst of the AIDS crisis. So, but you know, it was an important thing to give back to a community. So that was about 20 years ago when I was doing a lot of work for Fashion Cares and things. It's not all altruism. There was an amazing group of creative, energetic people that I loved being associated with. So it was fun. But that's okay. Totally right? Okay.
It's supposed to have more than one aspect that we love about it.
You want to bring to it the same passion you have for your business mm-hmm. or whatever other passions you have. And so you don't just do it. You want to find something you connect with. So did that. For the Canadian Marketing Association, that was very strategically thought through. Well, I don't know, massively thought through, but I got a job when I was, 31 or 32 as a VP at a company called Mosaic. And I had come from big agencies where they just kind of give you the business and you manage it, you nurture it. This is the case was you had some business, you had to go find some business. And so then I'm like, okay, I need to build a network, not understand it. I don't think I was that literal. Like I wasn't on a whiteboard, the future course of Stephen Brown, build a network. How do you do that? Read a book. I just knew there was this great group called Canadian Marketing Association. So I started volunteering. So I ran a conference. I sat on a conference committee, eventually ran the national convention. And then they asked me to be an MC at their awards for 7 years. And then they got me on their board. And then they made me their vice chair and chair. So you kind of grow through the path. But during that whole time, the Canadian Marketing Association is all marketing people. So it's ad agencies, but clients. So it's very good networking. And that helped me build my profile, which helped me build my business profile. And then the last few years, I've also done a lot of other stuff, poverty prevention work. I sit on the board with Casey House right now, which is turned from a hospice, HIV hospice, to a hospital. There's a combination of the two. So it feels great to volunteer. It also, you know, I make a lot of big corporations a lot of money in my marketing day job and advertising job. This is, you know, when you help a foundation make a few hundred thousand dollars, the impact of that few hundred thousand dollars is massive. So you really feel it. But again, at all times, this helps your brand. I didn't go into it knowing that, but you meet all sorts of people from different circles and those circles all start to interconnect. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden someone says, I'm looking for an agency or I need a marketing expert to help out. Who should I talk to? And they go, well, I know this guy, Steven, and he's a good guy.
Right.
And it's funny how that concept of he's a good person opens a lot of doors versus I am a smart person also, but I don't think people ask who's the smartest advertising marketing person out in Canada, and you go through that list, it's sort of that friendly referral. So we get a lot of friendly referrals. And my business partner, Garo, without ever, again, the two of us whiteboarding this, does the exact same thing for different causes. And it's helped us both build a good personal brand.
It's amazing how doing the right thing
is
so beneficial.
And easy.
And easy. And so easy. And then it's really aligned. And to your point, then people think of you, and that really is your brand. So when we think about advice for ambitious women who want to enhance their personal brand, so volunteering, obviously, makes sense. What else would you say as you're thinking about taking those steps to enhance your personal brand? What should women, regardless if they're in corporate, entrepreneurship, wherever their line of business is?
Well, I think be proudly ambitious is the first point. So
say more.
I think some people are uncomfortable, and you and I have talked about this, but I think some people are uncomfortable with how ambitious are you outwardly being? Because there's a line of boastfulness or arrogance. And
hard for women.
Yes.
I can't
answer that.
Yeah.
but I think I can empathize with it. I definitely think I can see it at times where you know, chest thumping can be such an awkward thing for people to do. You're not, and I think it is easier. I think a lot of men are trained through life, not trained, but where you'd be a bit more
encouraged,
boastful.
Maybe.
Encouraged. And I see that. So when I say be proudly ambitious, it doesn't mean look at what I've done. It's, you know, align yourself with people who are also ambitious. You know, there is a contagiousness behind it.
Yeah. Kind of your tribe.
Your tribe.
You will.
Yeah. Find your tribe on that. Mm-hmm. So there's that. I would start with that. So don't have any fear of being able to say, look what I'm doing and let's talk about what I'm doing. Because you do need to build and let people know about it. That's how you attract awareness, so get awareness and attract business.
I know we talked about when we were on a panel recently in Toronto that, you know, you also need to find some people who will share your story. So you gave that example of like, Stephen's a good guy. Oh, you're looking for this. Stephen's a good guy, which is a great way to get those referrals for business. Mm-hmm. It's one way. Yep. It's not the only way, but it can be challenging. And if we think about that panel, which, you know, there was a lot of women in the room wondering, you know, how do I celebrate those victories? Or, you know, I just won an award. It feels awkward to be like, hey, LinkedIn, I just won an award. And yet, why is that awkward?
Well, I just got an email this morning that I have won an award.
Hey, tell us more.
I'm not sure if I'm allowed to release it yet.
Okay.
So I'll tell you later.
You won an award.
I've won an award.
And you're very comfortable saying you've won an award.
I am.
So that's a lesson right there, actually, for ambitious women listening.
Oh, yeah. And
I do use it as a beautiful lead-in, you see, which I would have as a takeaway, too. Right? Like, meaning there was a moment and you took it. And I think sometimes women are like, I'd really like to say it, but I'm not going to say it.
Oh, no. Yeah, I totally no problem. And with that, though, I do immediately, because I am working on my brand and the business's brand.
Yes.
I am immediately going, okay, well, what will we do with this?
Yeah.
And that's a muscle that I think has to be trained. Now, it doesn't mean that you're going to look at me, look what I've done. Mm-hmm. It's about, you know, you anchor it in, why did I get this award?
Yes.
So why I'm getting this award is years of contribution and dedication to something. Mm. And you talk about that. And that's a good thing. But then you also have to bring all the people along with you who helped you get that.
Right. None of us get there alone.
Yeah. And if you don't want to do it, I get my business partner or my PR person or someone else who's doing it. I'm not going to be posting it, but you can't. But I do work. I don't want to sound totally pathetic, but I will help curate that. And that is our job.
Yes.
Of doing it. Now, I have a funny story if we have time for
of
a fun
course.
Story. I met about, I don't know, it was about 10 years ago. I met this, someone asked me to meet this guy. We'll call him Peter. And I knew him from business, from his reputation as a very smart, good, honorable guy. But I had never met him. And he was out of work. So he'd lost his job, which happens to everybody. Mm-hmm. So he came and met with me. And he sat down, we start talking, and he goes, well, I'm just asking him questions. And he goes, I wish I had managed my brand like you. And I'm like, I'm perplexed. I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, well, everyone knows Stephen Brown. And I go, I mean, he was exaggerating. Not everyone knows Stephen Brown, but I go, what do you mean? He goes, well, I've worked hard and I've done the job and I've been successful, but I've never built a network. And right now at 45, I don't have a job and I'm realizing I don't have a network. And that's the only time, it's happened a few times actually, that people have said this to me, is I didn't realize when my, if I knew what I was doing at 31 and 27 and 35, I would have been, I would have been proud of myself, because I didn't realize the impact of going to events, joining boards, trying to speak on panels, and now promoting things or networking socially and digitally and stuff like this. I didn't know the impact it has. You can't do it just for frivolous sakes. Like, you have to be, it has to be anchored in
authenticity. And you only have so much time too.
Exactly.
So you want to be strategic about it.
You have to be strategic about it. But I didn't understand. And so my comment about, you know, and if you want to be ambitious and you want to, and you should want to be ambitious, or I hope you want to be ambitious, it's you managing your brand is one of those key components. It is not, there are people who only, all they do is spend time building their brand and then it's false.
You need some substance.
You need a lot of substance. But part of your job is, so when I look at it, even my business, part of our, you know, we carve out a lot of percentage of time for the brand of the business, how we promote the brand of the business, our involvement as a business to build and extend that. Well, your personal professional brand is very similar. Like, if you don't,
well, it's tied to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you don't build, but I have to build a plan for that. So you kind of have to build a plan for your own one. And that means being comfortable with the form, a form of promotion.
So talking about network, because I think you've actually highlighted a really key aspect of career success. So what is your network strategy, and what would you suggest? You know, how do you go to now, because everyone knows Stephen Brown, but let's say you went to a new place or a new industry where people didn't know you. What's your strategy when you get to that event? How does Stephen Brown approach a networking event? I have a feeling you're not handing out your card to the 1,000 people there.
No.
So what's your strategy?
It depends. So if it's just like a luncheon or a breakfast thing, my strategy is sit next to people I don't know. It's that simple. Mm-hmm. And there's not much more to it. Well, sit next to someone I don't know, or sit near, at least at a table with some people I don't know. I like sitting next to someone I do know. Like, it's kind of helpful that way. If I'm going to a conference, which is overnight or a few days long, and they post who's coming to it, I will go through and see who's some interesting people I should go and talk to.
Mm-hmm. So you have a strategy. Love that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, like, have a strategy. And
there's
then
three people, maybe, if I found them, there they are, mm-hmm. and go, hi.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's a recruiter I used to work with. I still do work with. And he always, his goal is always, whenever he goes to these events, he goes to a lot, that's his business. He always sits next to someone new every time and gets a name. I'm not that outgoing. Like, I don't hand out cards constantly and do things like this. For me, it's more of a just sort of like find some interesting people and talk to them. And then, but it's natural conversation that gets you interesting things. Mm-hmm. People generally are uncomfortable talking to strangers. So if you break the ice I'm not on the subway doing this to somebody or on a bus. Like, you're in an event, you're all marketing people or advertising
yes.
people. If you break the ice, they'll talk to you.
Yeah.
And where that conversation can go anywhere. It might not go anywhere, but at least you're doing that.
You had a pleasant conversation. Yeah.
And I will push, they don't like it when I make them do this, but I'll say to, like, people love to cluster, pack mentality. So if five people from Fuse go to an event, they all sort of huddle together. I'm like, break up, break up, go talk to some people. And they're like, what? I go, well, you want to build your career. If you want my job, you have to do that. And my comment, and we talked about this, but my thing about this is get out from behind your screens. So my worry with younger people is they think because I've done a bunch of Instagram posts or I'm managing my LinkedIn that I'm managing my brand. And I'm like, well, that's a portion of it. And, and it is an important portion of it. But you really want to meet people, get comfortable face to face, eye to eye, having a conversation. It's not always easy, but it's a muscle. You have to train it.
So what's the last thing you've done that scared you, or, you know, can you take me back to a time when you've been fearless? And do you have a mantra or a favorite song, or, you know, how does Stephen Brown get supercharged?
No, I don't
to go towards that problem. You said right towards it. How do you do it?
Yeah, you just rip the Band-Aid off. I have friends who like the music they listen to before they have to do a big pitch. None of that.
Okay.
I have a few tricks that I do.
Well, we appreciate those.
One is I embrace fear.
Okay. Right.
So I find the word fearless entertaining. Like I get them. I know I'm not taking it that literally. I understand the concept of it because there were many times I would come across as fearless, and that's amazing. The fact is fear, like nervousness and things like this, is incredibly motivating for me.
Okay. So I always been like, how did you decide, hey, this works? I'm terrified. Let's go.
I don't know if I have a conscious moment. I do know that probably that class in grade 10, note to self, for younger people, take drama. Because being thrown on a stage and improv and things like this was incredibly, again, didn't know this was going to happen, but it helps you when you're put on the spot.
Yes.
So I remember when they started to ask me to start doing presentations and then you move up to pitches. My way of managing it is exercise in the morning. Something about releasing all those endorphins or something before you get up there is one little trick. The other is I rehearse. And so some people think, because I'm pretty natural when I'm on in front of people. And let me be clear, when I'm doing these presentations, you're often pitching to 10 people.
Mm-hmm. and there's a lot of money on the table.
There's a lot of money on the table. Yeah. So you want to, you don't want to look perfectly choreographed, but you don't want to look fumbly mm-hmm. or disorganized. So I rehearse. And I don't memorize lines. I don't put a lot of words on a PowerPoint presentation or anything like this. But I understand the concept of how to come up. I understand the importance that the more I know my stuff, the more natural I will be. And so there is a strategy behind it. You have to present to your own personal style and your own personal way. But yeah, I try to be as prepared as possible, get a good night's sleep, go for your run, and just do it. As far as the true question about fearless, though, is, yeah. You know, you start a company on a Thursday in January. We started it because we were working at a big company. They went through bankruptcy protection stuff. They shut down some businesses. One of the units was selling off other ones. They shut us down. So I didn't plan to be an owner of an agency, and I didn't know I was an entrepreneur, and I am. But when that all happens, I thought I was going to lose my job and go skiing for a month. And instead, I lost my job and started a business the next day.
Slightly different plan.
My business partner, Garo, found the funding and we just ran with it. And they wanted me because I had a good relationship with the bank. And, you know, we started the business at noon and the bank called at 12:45. Wow. So 45 minutes into it.
You know, that's not the usual story.
That's not the usual story. And so, you know, if you build it, they will come. Maybe that type of thing. That was our roll of the dice. That was when you're going through it, I don't think I was being fearless. But when I look back at it, I'm like, holy Christ, I was fearless.
Yes.
And then I look and I have to remind ourselves when we're having a bad quarter in more recent times is go back to those roots. Go back to that point where don't be scared. I mean, and there's always fear, don't get me wrong. But don't be scared of the worst case scenario. Focus on the best case scenario. Yeah. And back then we had nothing to lose.
Yeah.
I was already out of a job. So yeah. You could only go up. And I mean, yeah. I was confident I would get another job. But
yes.
And I'm glad that I had that the worst thing that can sometimes happen is I didn't have any time. Like this was a few weeks that we knew we were going to be losing our job. And you start to plan, and you start to talk to people and whatever, and your clients know you're about to collapse because bankruptcy protection is in there. So they're the ones who gave us the instant.
Go, we need you.
We need you. I'm like, oh. And then you just go. I don't know if I would have ever started my own business if I had had a 6-month plan to get it off the ground. Mm. I think I worked best for me.
Yeah.
It's just me. I worked best by the situation required quick action.
Yeah.
And the next day you start a business, you start whiteboarding. This is when I am whiteboarding. Whiteboarding, who do we need to call? What do we need to get done? Computers, phone numbers, names, da da da, and you just delegate, and run. And my job, and not just mine, but a few of us, was go talk to some clients who we've recently lost.
Yeah. Let's get some business going.
And they came.
That's inspiring.
Yeah.
So take me back, Stephen, to the 10-year-old you. Mm-hmm. What was that boy like? What were you into?
Well, I'm the third. I'm the baby of three kids. So
you're spoiled.
Well, I would barely call it
that's
that.
That's what the siblings will say.
Yes. I think they would say I had it easy.
Yeah.
So I was the happy-go-lucky one. I didn't have the burden of being the first. I didn't have the middle kid syndrome thing. I just was whatever. I was the forgotten one.
So, that's what the baby always says.
So with 10, no, you know what? 10-year-old Stephen was pretty happy. I was average in school. Mm-hmm. I was friendly and outgoing, but, you know, I was a bit lazy. I learn constantly. I love learning, but I'm an experienced learner. So, you know, the structure of read, write, test yeah, wasn't.
That got old fast.
Yeah. But I don't think I had a clue at 10. I was a young 10-year-old. I don't think I had a clue of what was my future going to be.
Which actually sounds nice. I think it's such an intense time. You know, I think technology has changed childhood so much. And, you know, you're a father of a 13-year-old son. How different is that when you look at what he's up to and kind of yourself in and around that time?
Xander is my 13-year-old. He's amazing. About to turn 13. But I don't co-parent. I have an amazing relationship with Marcia, his mom, who asked me many years ago to donate. Mm-hmm. And I'm Uncle Stephen, but he knows I'm his biological father.
Right.
And we are incredibly close. And that's why I'm in Ottawa hanging out with him, because he lives in Ottawa. So when I look at him and I look at my 10-year-old self and I think of him when he was 10, I think the difference is, I think the fundamentals actually aren't that different. He's way more sporty and athletic than I was. I was a skier and that's pretty much all I did. Mm-hmm. I loved it. But I think part of his, because he's a single kid, an only child and, you know, busy mom working, single mom, he's into a lot of more prescriptive sports. So team sports, which I love watching that on him. I think I had a lot more free time that my brother and I would waste in the basement throwing Lego at each other that we build or various things like that. So he finds, but I took him on a golf trip this summer to Whistler. We had an amazing week. What I notice now is when you have him for a week, because I take him on all these vacations, is he doesn't need it all to be booked up. I think he's now got that realization that dream time without him not acknowledging it, basement time, I called it like basement wasting time, is actually an incredibly amazing time. So we do a lot of that. We go golfing, but then we just go, I don't know, hang out and do stuff like that. So I don't think, I would say I do worry about the technology side of things for kids. I do worry about social media, but I also then go back to the fundamentals of humanity and it's still the basics of, you know, roof over their heads, love and support, community, things like that. Those are still the number one. But, you know, my fight back then was the TV, how much screen time I was having. Now they have YouTube and they have multiple forms of it.
Well, but the TV's in your hand.
That's the other challenge. Yeah, I think they're all getting neck problems because of looking down. But.
Well, and also, and we talked about this on our panel, the challenges around social media and sometimes it can be difficult for women when they put themselves out there. If we think about some of the women leaders, you know, there's a lot of keyboard courage.
And when you think
about personal brand, and so if you are being ambitious, not everybody's comfortable with ambition.
Yeah. And I have a 16-year-old niece and, you know, I see what sometimes people write on Instagram about her. And I'm like, how can you, and it's that keyboard courage. Mm-hmm. How can you say that to someone?
Yeah, actually.
Yeah. I think we always had that in the hallways of high school or junior high. Mm-hmm. But it's one thing to say it behind someone's back, which is I guess the way I was raised, and not mm-hmm. that that's good. You shouldn't say things behind people's back, but people do. Mm-hmm. But now they're saying it on a key, punching like in keys
publicly,
for the world to see.
Too,
and I feel that stress and pressure for them. I think for young women, I think there's more body image stuff that seems to be told about women than they do to men. I'm not saying it doesn't happen to men. Mm-hmm. But when you add that layer onto social acceptance and just, you know, the mood swings that you're going to have when you're at this age mixed with what people are saying about you and then about the color of your pants or the choice of your haircut, mm-hmm. all these things, I'm like, why should anyone have to go through that at that age? But it's there.
It's there. And if I look at your company, Fuse, and you mentioned 90 people, it's a company that really values diversity and inclusion. Why is that your competitive advantage?
I think it's because we don't actually think about it. And it's just naturally inherent.
You're there, We're there already.
I think I've also learned, like, one thing I'll say, like, the three people who started the company are three men. So we've caught ourselves and we're basically good people. I'm confident saying that, but we've caught ourselves on some biases that have happened over the years, and you realize, oh, we've, I mean, I'm a, I'm a gay man, so I don't know if I identify with straight men, but I'm definitely identify with women also. I think there's a weird way of looking at things that maybe I've experienced differently. So I think that nuance to the trifecta of the three partners is one thing, but I catch us on gender norms and gender bias that we sometimes have. But the difference is that we can actually talk about it pretty comfortably and even laugh at ourselves doing it. But we didn't say, okay, because a lot of my leadership team are women. We didn't say, well, we have to hire more women. We had to hire smart people. We had to hire people who we could work well with. And there's a lot of women who just naturally took that job. Now, I will say we look at diversity in the form of ethnicity. And I think we still have some room. We have some room to grow there. The industry that we're in is fairly white, Caucasian. So looking at that, and that's one where I keep an eye open on and say, I think we need to do more. I know we're not one of the industries that attracts as many as technology would and various things is, but there's work that the industry needs to do and we need to support that. But I think the main thing is, you know, my mom and my grandmother were a huge influence on my business career.
How so?
My parents divorced when I was around 11 and my mom was a teacher, but she wanted to get the family's economic state back to my dad always paid. I'm not saying anything like that, but when you go through divorce, there's an economic shift.
Yes.
And a finance shift. And so she went into business or into more corporate type work versus teaching. And, you know, and this is the 80s and you're sitting there and you watch
that's
her.
That's a role model.
Yeah. You watch her. You sit at the kitchen table or the dining room table and you hear about the things that she went through as a woman trying to build her career in her 40s in the 80s. And you learn a lot. You see a lot of shit. Can I say that? You see a lot of crap that men did consciously and unconsciously. And let me be clear, a lot of it was conscious. Or you saw a lot of things that she had to fight for that a man wouldn't have had to fight for. And that's unconscious. But you saw a lot of those things. So I think we were all part of that journey. My grandmother, and that was just because of her birthright of age. I mean, she was born in an era where she had to ask for permission to go to university. And her mother had to fight her father to get permission to pay for the tuition. Because his thought was, well, you're a woman, you'll get married. And then my grandmother, you know, she was from a poor family, never went to school, at seven, did well, read like crazy, incredibly
gave herself her own education.
And at 73 or 4, went back to university because she found out it was free. And at 87 was, I think, the oldest graduate of U of T at the time.
Oh my gosh, that's so
and her
inspiring.
Marks were so much better than mine in university because she graduated after I had already graduated. So I'm like, God, this is embarrassing. But anyway, so those two, without knowing it, because this is, for me, learning is just through experiencing. My mom taught me a lot about business, just about, you know, just by listening to what she had to go through, listening to how she presented herself, how she had to prepare for things. I think
resiliency
I learned a lot from her.
Total
resiliency. And my grandmother taught me fight for what you want. And so, you know, when you come out being the only one of the few gay men in business, because it's not like I had a peer set. I have a much bigger peer set now. I don't know many presidents, CEOs who are gay or outly gay. There's probably lots who are, but that I think they helped me realize don't hide from that. Don't, because I did in the early days.
Like be your authentic
just
self.
Just be your authentic self. But just little things that I learned from them. I have a great dad also, but from business, I think I learned more from the two of them. Life that affects business, I guess.
Yeah. Being your authentic self.
Yeah. And then neither of them would ever have called themselves, I think they look like me, look back and go, wow, look what we did. But I don't know if they consciously went saying, I'm going to change this little microcosm of a world that we live in. They just did it.
Look at the beautiful ripple effects, though.
Yeah.
So powerful. Yeah. So final question, Stephen. Mm-hmm. What is your dream for Canada?
I love this country. I don't take it for granted for a minute. And I think what upsets me during an election period is all you hear about are the negatives. I've been watching the leaders being on CBC, being one-on-ones with a bunch of undecided voters. And everyone's, it just seems so many people are unhappy with Canada. And I'm like, how can you be unhappy with Canada? I've traveled
a lot.
The
best place on the
I know.
World.
And so yeah. I know it's not perfect. And I'm not, I want to be clear. I'm not saying this. I know I have an entitled position with my career and stuff like this. So maybe I view Canada. I do view Canada, but I don't come from entitled roots. I don't surround myself with entitled people. I know a few, but so I think I have a fairly good grasp. And sorry, as a marketer, an advertiser, I'm constantly looking at trends, stats, and numbers. And the minute I go out of this country and I look around, I go, wow, we have it great. And the minute I turn on CNN or just open the Globe Mail or watch CBC, I know what's happening south of us. That I just want to sometimes say, actually, our number one job or the number one importance for Canada is to continue this journey we were already on. So when I look at the people who are unhappy with the immigration policies, I just want to yell, and I do want to yell, we're all, anyone who's Caucasian from many centuries of life here, we're all immigrants. There's only a small segment of Canada, the indigenous population, who can say that they're not immigrants. So get comfortable with the shift there. You know, everyone's talking about a lot of the gender things that are changing and people are uncomfortable with it. Gender normative bathrooms and various things like this. And I'm like, isn't this an amazing thing that a child can wake up and say, well, I was born with this equipment, but I feel like this. And I'm like, these are great things. So I guess my thing about Canada is we have so much. Turn your negativity towards what can I do with what we have. And I think you and I are living proof of that. It's like, no one handed me a business. I didn't get this from my family. And I did have some things handed to me just by being born in Canada. You know, I didn't have any of these. I didn't have any of the barriers of being a new Canadian or, visible minority or anything like that. So I had that. I did have a few barriers of being gay and things like this, but no one gave it to me. I had to fight for it, but I didn't have to fight that hard because I live in Canada.
I agree. That's the beauty of Canada. You really can make your way.
You can.
Yeah. And recognizing, yes, there still remains work to do.
Yep. Absolutely.
Stephen Brown, an absolute pleasure to have you on the show. A beautiful dream for Canada. It has been so delightful to speak with you today. Stephen Brown, president of Fuse. Again, Fuse Marketing, Fuse Health, and Fuse Live. Give us the website if people want to learn more about your company.
FuseMG.com.
Nice and easy. Thank you again, Stephen Brown.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening. We want our community to grow. Tell your friends, follow us on Instagram, and sign up for our newsletter at fearlesswomenpodcast.com to get the early scoop. Subscribe in Apple Podcasts or in your favorite app. And if you like what you hear, give us a 5-star rating. I'm Janice McDonald. Stay fearless. Thank you to the 30% Club Canada for your support of the Fearless Women podcast. The 30% Club believes that gender balance on boards and in senior management not only encourages better leadership and governance, but diversity further contributes to better all-around board performance and ultimately increased corporate performance for both companies and their shareholders. Want to learn more? Visit their website, 30%club.org, and select the Canada chapter to find out about membership, supporters, and key resources. Thank you to BDC, the bank devoted exclusively to entrepreneurs, for your support of the Fearless Women podcast. We love smart companies that want to amplify women's voices. For more information, go to bdc.ca/women.